to the Bitcoin Consciousness podcast. I'm here today with Carrie C, who has her own podcast, and she's a Bitcoiner. She has been meditating for a big part of her life, so I decided to invite her on. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you, Samer. It's so lovely to be here and so lovely to connect with you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for coming. So let's dive into who you are and how you found Bitcoin and spirituality. Like, how would you present yourself to an audience interested both in Bitcoin and in higher consciousness?
Whew. Now, there's a big question to get us started. The spiritual came first, so I'll start there, and then I'll kind of weave in the Bitcoin story as it kind of became part of the DNA and intertwined itself with the spiritual path later on. So, gee, I've never tried to tell the story in this way. I would say that I'll do it in decades. So up till 10, so I'll just kind of go childhood. I was a happy kid, but there were some stressful family circumstances. In my teens, that came out in a very messy way. A lot of conflict with my mother, a lot of existential angst and questioning, and the beginning of spiritual searching. So I would have done my first meditation course probably at the age of 17 or 18. I'd started looking for answers. I also, by the way, looked for those answers in psychedelics and alcohol and, you know, all those things one does, or many of us do, as teenagers. And by the age of 24, I found my way into Alcoholics Anonymous 12-step program, and explored spirituality through AA, which is a kind of non-denominational, they talk about, you know, God as you understand God. And so back in those days, that was like 1990, the idea of being spiritual but not religious was not as quite as widely known, talked about, understood as it is these days. So that appealed to me. And I explored, there was a mixture, there was so much to unravel from my childhood. So a lot of it was psychological. So there was a lot of looking for emotional healing. There was looking for spiritual answers. I am Jewish originally, and some of my trauma comes from being fundamentally second generation Holocaust survivor. And so there was a lot of kind of trying to pass out the pieces, you know, trying to unthread these various elements that were all knotted in together. And I, you know, looked through synagogue, and I looked at Christian texts, and I looked at Buddhist texts, and I explored the way we all do. There was a lot of New Age spirituality in there. There was a lot of, it was just that kind of incredibly broad exploration. You know, where do you start with that stuff? Where do you start? You start with the first thing, and you try to unravel the first knot, and that leads you to the next thing, and you follow the thread, you know, you follow the golden thread. I found some stability in my life through my work. I found the right path for me in corporate training and coaching, in communication skills and presentation skills and business writing skills and influencing skills. And that was a good place for me. And I worked with another guy for 11 years, and then I went out on my own and have been for the last 18 years or so. And that created a real underlying stability for me, as did AA for a long time. And then my husband came into my life not till I was 39, actually. And that was kind of a really, he's an, it's a cliche, but he's my rock, he's my salvation, he's my home, he's my safe space in the world. And it's funny because as of tomorrow, actually, we'll be 17 years from the day we met. And just the other night, I realized and I said to him, I think I finally understood the word trust. Like, this is the first time possibly in my life I feel like I've genuinely, deeply trusted another human being at kind of three levels. There's this level of dependability to just kind of be there for you in a moment of difficulty or in very practical ways, like simply if I need someone to pick up my son because I can't, those kinds of practical day-to-day ways. I trust him emotionally. I can open up to him and, not be judged in that. And there's a connection. The third is really just being, good company. We get on at a very human level. We just get on. So those were the pieces that were kind of all there in my background. Turmoil came into my life again. Funny how they both happened at once, but I decided to try drinking again after 27 years of sobriety. That was fine for a couple of years until COVID hit, and I'm down here in Melbourne, Australia, and my business was taken away from underneath me, and my son was at home, and we had six lockdowns, and my son got 3 hours of schooling a day. No, a week, what am I saying? And it was tumultuous, and I felt like I had a lot of questions about how it was being handled, and there was a lot of online piling on for asking questions. At one stage, I was concerned with the vaccine. I read an article that some girls were missing their periods, and I literally just posed the question, is this something I should be worried about? It was not for me, but for younger women. And a friend of mine, well, sorry, a cousin of mine who's a doctor, replied with an article that said how to answer the conspiracy theorists. Because I'd asked a question about, and so that, I don't know, somehow for some reason that captured, that little anecdote captured my whole experience for 3 years or for 2.5 years here in Melbourne. And so I lost a lot of friendships, I lost my business, and I ended up drinking quite a lot. But having said that, I also found myself with time to do a lot of gardening and a lot of meditation. And I was doing Sam Harris's app because it was a nice, easy 10 minutes a day. And for all the years of meditation that I've done over the years, I've been to retreats, I've found fantastic teachers, and direct path teaching is where I've really found my attraction over the years. Ajahn Shanti is just a phenomenal teacher. So I listened to a lot of Ajahn, and I've been to retreats with him. My last boyfriend before I met Ken, my husband, had been a Buddhist monk in Burma for 15 years. And so I learned a lot about Buddhism through him, and I went to Buddhist Society of Victoria retreats with him, silent retreats. And so all of that sort of came together with kind of all the other meditation and prayer and other kind of spirituality over the years, as I had this lovely quiet time through COVID, despite all the noise and the turmoil that was going on in my outside life, there was this lovely connection happening with Sam Harris's meditations and the other teachers who are on his app. And I had my first real glimpses of what everybody is talking about when they talk about not being our body, being the consciousness, being I can't put it into words. And it was glimpses, it was microseconds. But I had a few of them, and they were the most transformative and life-changing moments of my life, actually. Bitcoin only came into my life 2 years ago, and it was because a friend of mine, because I lost my income, and so I was looking for ways to make money. And a friend of mine, who was a nurse, had done very well in the 2018 bull run on altcoins, and so I tried to follow her path, and rode the 20, well, what was it, 20 bull market up, and then back down again. Sorry, 21 maybe. I'm losing track, and somewhere in there, I started to sort out Bitcoin from everything else, and I connected with Bitcoin. Firstly, at of course the economic level and the scarcity and the Austrian economics, because I actually come from an economics background before I moved into corporate training. I was 7 or 8 years in financial markets and fixed interest, so I had a reasonable understanding of the issues in the world with money printing and inflation. So that was a very immediate click for me with Bitcoin. On our first date, I kind of connected with that pretty quickly. What's happened for me more deeply as I've gotten into it is a real sense of kind of truthfulness that relates, authenticity, realness, soundness, ground level money that is related in my mind to the ground level of consciousness. So for me, they come together at that level, that sense of something that is deeply truthful and comes from a space of love, but authenticity. It's just truthful and essential and foundational and deeply grounded, like kind of in your gut. I feel Bitcoin in my gut more so, like it started in my head, with the kind of all the ideas and the kind of whole swirl of energy around it. And then I kind of guess it moved more into my heart and the humanitarian and what it can do for humanity. And at this stage, it feels much more really deeply down in my gut as this deep, energetic truth and this powerful kind of pulsing force or life force, like a heartbeat, like a every 10 minutes, tick tock, next block. It's that there's something deeply rhythmic about it. So I've never put all that together.
Yeah, I
Did
can
that
relate.
answer your question? I don't know if that answered your question.
I think many can resonate with the way you described Bitcoin here. Also for me, one way to look at it, if you think of duality and non-duality, and everything in duality is changing. It's just like appearances. So you can't trust it. You can only trust that it will change. That's the only thing you can trust. So Bitcoin and is from this non-duality where it just is, and people can just project their own ideas on it. And those projections are in duality, they are not solid. But Bitcoin itself is solid. And when you talked about the trust with your husband, it's I have experienced that, like, fear drove me to understand Bitcoin more and more. And that fear turned into trust, because after some time, it was no other doubts that I could investigate. Like, all fears I had already checked them out. So I found myself trusting Bitcoin to a deeper extent. than I have trusted any human being. It's even more than, you know, spiritual teachers, for example. It's like they are still a human, so we can learn from them. But you never want to give yourself to a spiritual teacher because of the human factor. I mean, at least I'm talking about my experience. Mm-hmm. So then I find that Bitcoin have taught me how to relate deeper to something, because it's not like some invisible entity, like an angel or anything like that. It is mm-hmm. something physical. It is something that very influences us every day, but it's not personal. It's no human beings. For me, it came in this straight in between heaven and earth, so to speak, where anything on the earth can't be trusted, because they have their own inheritance, they have their own baggage. And even the most enlightened teacher is tainted by the culture. So I find it my ability to connect to another node was increased with Bitcoin. And when I learned to connect, when I learned to trust on that deeper level, like node to node, my node to Bitcoin's node, then I found it easier to sort of start creating similar connections with humans, because I have learned to connect beyond all the illusions, beyond all the different concepts. And then, oh, maybe I can do this with a human, because then I connect directly to the node of the human, not all the layers of conditioning, which I had tried in the past. And then you always get disappointed, because you have this idea of who the person is, and they never can live up to that idea. But connecting node to node, all of those layers, even if they have been doing bad things in the past or good things, it's just those surface layers, duality, and connecting with other humans on a non-duality level. Is that something you could relate to?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's very healing for me to hear you say that. And people talk about Bitcoin changes you. And it certainly changed my life and my passion and my interest and the people that I connect with. But I can't say that I've had that experience. But as you say that, what it makes me see and realize is that I reacted to the lockdowns and the people, the neighbors, literally telling on one another for going out past 9 o'clock or having someone over. I reacted to that with all my deep childhood programs to do with Holocaust and, you know, what it was to be a Jew in Germany and to be locked in and to be, you know, to be constrained and locked in and so forth, you know, those kind of early days before things got to their very worst. And since then, I've actually been in a deeply untrusting space of the people around me. And, you know, Seb Bunny, who I know has been on your show with Looking Glass Education, talks about how Bitcoin in effect can heal trauma. And he talks about what that means for the parent-child relationship, the connection that can happen when you're free from financial worry about inflation, when maybe just one parent can work and another can be home, or both parents can have greater connection and loving relationships, quality time with their kids. And as you say this, I can almost feel something healing inside of me as you say that, that if I can get past my distrust of people's behaviors and their fears and the it became so deeply political and ostracizing and divisive here in Melbourne and in some other parts of the world. I feel that if I could connect in to somebody's know the truth of who they are and get past the noise, and everything is noise, you know, we talk about what's noise and what's signal. There's just no point. I've always enjoyed reading newspapers and kind of being aware of what's going on in the world, more probably economically than politically, is what happens to have taken my fancy and the bit that I connect in with or enjoy most. There's just no appeal for me. This is one of the ways in which Bitcoin is changing me, is the lack of interest in all the noise. And I think your description of people as nodes, where there's this internal, validated, verified truth of who people are, the consciousness, the light, the life force, the, you know, that is with those layers of just noise and personality and beliefs and ideas and actions and all the stuff that goes on top, you know, that and I love this. I love this. I love the way you just said that, because it's resonating really deeply in me that that's actually because I've been struggling with that. I've been going, I don't know how to heal from this. It feels like a form of trauma, and I've certainly seen people, you know, talk online about feeling traumatized. People who visit this city say they sense it, you know, they talk about it openly. You know, not from my prompting, just people on Twitter. I saw someone say the other day, I visited Melbourne and it feels like the whole place is traumatized, depending which part of Melbourne you go to. So, like, this is my deep hope for a hyper-Bitcoinized world, or a Bitcoin standard world, whatever you want to call it. I really feel like this is the next step in human evolution. And to the degree that Robert Breedlove talks about zero, like a birth, you know, and just as fire, you know, Bitcoin is often likened to fire as an invention that changed the course of humanity at so many different levels. There was so much of what fire does for humanity in the way of defense and attack and light and warmth and you know, obviously cooking meat and what that meant for our digestive systems and the development of the brain. And we started talking about time just before the show. I don't know what kind of time it could take, and at one level there is no such thing as time, and that's just one of those social constructs that's kind of agreed upon for practical purposes. But if there it feels like this could be a kind of ground zero moment, you know, that 3rd of January 2009, the first block was created, and that sense of inevitability around the evolution of humanity on a sound money system that allows for some sense of financial security and freedom and greater predictability and safety and a kind of capacity after years of external warring, because we're internally warring, because we're always struggling, because we're always fighting, you know, it's like we've never, as a species, we've never been able to evolve out of that fight, flight, or freeze modus operandi, because everything is always a fight and a struggle. And Bitcoin for me is the hope of something different, because how much of that has been underpinned by unsound money and money that is corruptible and therefore that can be commandeered by governments and manipulated such that they are forever, siphoning wealth from the working and productive class to the government public service class. And the idea that that could be more equally distributed in a way that allows people productivity and freedom and true property rights that cannot be stolen either through tax or through inflation. I can't begin to imagine the sense of relief that comes from that. And people talk about, it's quite common in pop psychology to talk about the I'll be happy when syndrome. Oh, I'll be happy when I've bought the house or when I've married the fella or married or had the first kid or the second kid or when we've paid off the mortgage or when we retire or, I'll be happy when. And that's, I wouldn't say that I've ever been caught up in that per se, or perhaps my version of it is I can relax when. I can breathe when such and such is paid off. I can breathe when I've got enough savings to be able to retire. I can exhale when, whatever it is. Like this sense of when do you get to relax? When do you get to not be in fight, flight, or freeze? And it's that, we're on the treadmill and we make this. It's like it's a sign of it's like a badge of honor to go, how are you doing? Oh, I'm busy. Like it's a competition for who can out-busy the next person. And there's no truth in that, and there's no groundedness in that, and there's no room to flourish or to let go of that base layer of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We can't, it's so difficult to move on to those enlightened levels of creativity and expression and enlightenment at the peak of Maslow's pyramid because we are forever caught in the struggle. And so, I wonder what your thoughts. I always get interested in how other people perceive a potential hyper-Bitcoinized world. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I had plenty of visions when you were talking here. And to me, the Bitcoin community is separate from the Bitcoin protocol. And I've had an interesting journey coming to terms with the Bitcoin community. Because I should talk about there that it's like, if only this happened, then I would be happy. And most of the Bitcoin community is stuck in this pattern regarding Bitcoin because they think if only Bitcoin grows, everything will be okay. You see, it's the same as the mainstream person thinking, when I get a bigger house, I will be happy. So the whole Bitcoin community is stuck in that similar pattern because it's never solved by an external event. And this is the spiritual dimension of it. Like we need to, the change need to happen inside, and then it can be shown in the external world. And when we are trying to fix a problem on the in on the outside, like the Bitcoin community is, they're working for Bitcoin, trying to make mass adoption. So basically, they are trying to say, if we can make this happen, then everything will be okay. Bitcoin fixes this. But that's sort of a mass illusion that I've been sort of untethering myself from. It's not been an easy journey because I love the Bitcoiners and I really connected with the Bitcoiners, but this inner truth of that we are already abundant, it's just that we forgot it. And that the Bitcoin community is gathering around these scarcity and lack patterns. And I think now we are in scarcity and lack. This thing on the outside, Bitcoin, can help us to overcome this. So let's work in the external world. And then they neglect the inner processes in that process. So they work like other people do. They work in the external world trying to fix an internal problem. So if we look at this more from engineering point of view and our physical bodies and our energy bodies, the problem is that we are trying to fill this hole inside from the outside, mm-hmm. right? But the real solution is when we open the tap inside, our direct connection to the source. And when we open our own connections inside, our energy body is just, it's just filling up from this limitless source. And then the external world, it's a secondary effect, becomes abundant. So we don't work in the external world to create abundance. We just open the tap and we realize that we are co-creators.
Mm-hmm.
That our node is just as valuable as Bitcoin's node or as Angel Gabriel or whatever. Everyone's node is equally connected to the source. And it's just an illusion that someone else's node should be more valuable or more bigger. It's just a question on how much bandwidth we have sort of managed to open to this direct source. And then it starts with the energy bodies just filling up and pushing out the crap, the conditioning. And then it goes into the physical body. We become healthy. We become strong. And then we start attracting opportunities, ideas from like a non-duality, non-fear-based space. And then we can look at Bitcoin and see, wow, this is something that could really help us to spread this awareness. It can help us to spread abundance in the outside world. We don't need this confusion of hierarchies. Wow, let's just use Bitcoin. Let's support Bitcoin. But in combination with people realizing their own innate divine nature, that's where the abundance actually comes from.
Wow, what a concept. How absolutely true, and something I've never thought of. What I have been aware of, as you say that, is that we're doing what we talk about it as a peaceful revolution. But in fact, many of us, and myself included, and I'm absolutely caught in this trap and I'm aware of it, get caught with enormous, caught up in the anger and the frustration, and it's a level of passion around, you know, central banks and governments, and we get into the Austrian economics and the libertarian and the, you know, all of these elements that, you know, as we know with revolutions, if it comes from anger, all that happens is different angry, egotistical people come to power to replace the old regime. And clearly that's what happened in the Russian Revolution and the French Revolution. And, you know, it really, it's just always the case. And so you can't fight anger and control and hatred with anger and control and hatred. And I'm also interested in this whole idea of kind of power versus force. You know, force is control and manipulation, and it's physical, and it's ego, and it's push, and it's like the difference between magnetic energy and dynamic energy. You know, force is making things happen, it's the yang, whereas the yin is kind of the power, the pure power of love and authenticity and truth. The magnetic energy of people come to it rather than pushing that dynamic energy, pushing it out into the world. We get caught in that masculine, and it's a very masculine community, and it has a lot of masculine energy of, do make things happen. And I mean masculine in the most healthy and positive sense of the word, but that very let's sort of get up and go and make things happen. And it's at the engineering level, and it's at the networking level, and it's at the communication level, and it's at the lobbying level, and it's at the mining level, and it's very energized, and there's a power in that. But it feels to me like what you're saying is we need to tap into more of that deep, truthful. And I saw someone say this the other day, we don't need to actively orange pill. People will discover it for themselves. I was reading an article today in the newspaper. I said that I don't visit, read the newspapers much, but my dad recommended that I read this particular article. And it was about inflation and what the Reserve Bank is doing with it here in Australia and the number of interest rates expected and so forth. There's trying to control and suppress the inflation that's kind of out of control. But the pain that people are feeling with interest rates and with their increased mortgages, which are, just enormous. The size of the increase is enormous, and the suffering that people are having, and you don't want people to come to Bitcoin that way. And yet, a little bit like so many of us discover spirituality through suffering and looking for answers, you may well be right. I mean, I do my podcast because A, I like connecting with other Bitcoiners, and it's my way of meeting new Bitcoiners. But B, because I want to explain the basics of Bitcoin to non-Bitcoiners. And, perhaps I don't need to. Perhaps it's just I need to do the inner work of really grounding myself in consciousness, because you bring a whole different energy. And I've been very aware of that, actually. I keep thinking, what can I bring to the community that isn't already here? What's the point of doing a podcast when there's, heaven knows how many Bitcoin, thousands of Bitcoin podcasts out there? And I feel like the only thing that is worth doing that could make a difference in this space is to deeply connect with my core, is to deeply rest in consciousness and let it unfold from there. Take inspired action from a source and a place of truth, rather than that kind of go out and get busy and make things happen. Because I've always had a lot of that A type, that A type energy. I'm quite cerebral, and I'm very energetic, and it's like hustle. Hustle is the word of the century, isn't it? People like to hustle, and it's like, and everyone's got their side gig, and everyone's hustling. And there's a kind of there's a buzz that comes with that. It's a drug, and this is the hard thing with meditation. It's 20 to 30 minutes of just before all the noise and the buzz and the energy even starts to settle down. I did a meditation just before, and this woman, she's an Australian nun, Buddhist nun, and she described it as muddy water that's been stirred up. And really, for me, always the first 20 to 30 minutes is just letting that mud settle and the water still before I can even start to feel sort of relax into silence, start to feel the silence beneath the noise. literally and metaphorically. And as you say this, it's like my intuition has been there, that that's the most important thing I can do for Bitcoin and for the community. And yet I've been overridden by my natural human instinct to hustle.
I think it's a big shift, a conceptual shift, because what it means is that we trust our divine nature or our inner light to provide for everything we need rather than physical action. So that's the big shift that humanity is going through. It's like, now, it's too good to be true. We can't be lazy and everything just happen by itself. But yes, that is actually how it happens. Because when we go inwards, we open the tap to the limitless source. As long as we work in the external world, we're always working within the limits of our own capacity. So we can only get as much as we are physical or mentally capable of creating. But when we go inside, we are just allowing that flow that just wants to guide us.
There's a couple of teachers who come to mind as you say that. One whom I just adore, he's a little bit older now. His name is Mark Allen, and he's written a beautiful book that I loved called The Type Z Guide to Success, or I guess you would in America pronounce it The Type Z Guide to Success. And what he's saying is that most successful people in the world are the A-type personalities, and he describes himself as a Z-type personality because he's lazy. And what he does is he only wanted to he set out on an experiment at the age of 30 to see what would happen if he tried to live life completely on his terms. And for him, that meant musician's hours. Never gets up before midday, may or may not work in the afternoon if he feels like it. He does do a lot of different sort of meditation and affirmation. And he runs just a phenomenally successful publishing house that published Eckhart Tolle's Power of Now. And he's friends with Eckhart. And he goes about this in this incredibly lazy way. That's again the magnetic. Things come when you're in that centered and aligned space. And I've been listening actually over the last couple of years again to, I listened to him years ago, and I'm sort of back in really enjoying his stuff at the moment, is Dr. Joe Dispenza. And they're doing a lot of data collection and putting what do they call it? Like those brain scanners, like those little suction caps that you have on your head so that you can monitor the brain waves as people go into deep, deep meditation. And they're doing it, like he's got these live workshops with heaven only knows how many hundred or thousand people there. And they'll all go into meditation at once, and they of course hit these really deep states, and there's a lot of spontaneous healing going on of like massive things like blindness since birth, or major cancers, walking from wheelchairs. I mean, it sounds like the miracle, it sounds like it could easily be a con job, and yet there are just simply too many testimonials now to kind of deny it. And they also do a lot of remote healing. And again, this idea that I'm in a Facebook group, and he says, you change that inner, like all of these teachers, You change the inner, he says, the number of people who have just created immediate, almost overnight abundance from simply hitting that spot, that frequency, that truth. I'm listening to a lovely series on Gaia at the moment, the Gaia TV, with a woman called Teresa Bullard, I think it is. I hope I haven't got her name wrong. And really bringing a lot of Kabbalistic, but she's very whole within herself. It's a truly kind of holistic series that explores things from science and evolution and different kind of spiritual and religious, and really brings it together in a thorough, comprehensive way. And yet again, this idea. And you're right about, I started out imagining into the future, this idea of the future of Bitcoin, and you said as a, we get into the we'll be happy when, we'll relax when. You change the energy in this moment, and this is the whole point of Eckhart Tolle, his book, The Power of Now. You change the energy in this moment, and there's a million possibilities in this moment. There's trillion possibilities in this very moment. But not if I'm looking forward and not if I'm grounded in the past. And so I was saying to someone the other day, it's like I'm going through a process of detoxing from who I used to be. It's really detoxing from a lot of old beliefs, old ideas, and that's scary to be in this moment. I imagine coming into my body sometimes as an alien in the morning, and that idea of having no past, no history, and what is it to be a human being today, and how would I act, and what do I do, and without a past and without a future, without, it's that 50 First Dates with Drew Barrymore and Adam Sandler, that movie. She wakes up every morning with no recollection of who she is or her life. And what they do is they fill in her memories for her and they record stuff. But I wonder what it would be like to not be filled in with the memories, if I could deeply detach from the story of who I've been and what my life has been, as well as my stories about what the future could or might be. That's a beautiful space to be. That moment, I love that moment. That's a really, I love that emptiness.
The situation as I see it today is that we get insights, we understand, like you've been doing spirituality for a long time, so these concepts, it's nothing new for you. But what happens is when we wake up in the morning, it's the inherited financial scarcity, social scarcity from our bloodline that is kicking in every morning. So even if we know on a mental level, we know, I should just go inside and open my light and everything be okay. But it's this deep programming in all of us, because in the past generations, people didn't have access to this higher consciousness that we have now. We can read books, we can easily mentally get information about how things work. But we have the baggage from all of these generations in our bloodlines that the only way for them to improve their life was to cover up their pain and become stronger, stronger in the way of force, right? So it's these force patterns. That are, so this is when I work with clients, it's like the mental understanding is just such a small part. Then it's really like the layers that we have inside of us, in ourselves. And we need to really make an effort is the wrong word, effort not to do things, you know, because it's like we are so programmed to do things, not only from this life and the mainstream media, but it's in our genes, in our cells, that we need to work and work and work, because that was the only thing our ancestors could conceive of.
And I think that's biological as much as ancestral. You know, I think it's in our body. That the evolution hasn't caught up with the comfort and the ease of our lives in the West, you know, today.
Yeah, similar like eye color, hair color, you know, it's in the body.
Yes, yes, indeed, indeed. There's a couple of teachers that you're making me think of. I think it's, well, it's quite commonly talked about in direct path teachers, the idea of effortless effort, you know, the idea of when you're meditating, because that whole thing of when you're, you know, there's the letting go of the thoughts and the settling down. And yet still there's the meditator who's trying to meditate, who's wanting something to happen here, who's striving for an altered state, who wants to see the truth, you know, that meditator is. And so that sort of need to let, there's a level of effort, but it needs to be much, looser to go about it a different way. It's interesting that the few moments that I had that were really quite revolutionary for me, where I really sort of sensed myself as consciousness or beingness or awareness, I don't know what to call it, happened almost as I was drifting off to sleep, you know? And I had that realm because I was so deeply relaxed. There's a Dzogchen, I don't know how you pronounce it, monk, who was interviewed on Sam Harris's app, Dzogchen. And his name is Mingyur Rinpoche. And he has this lovely giggly style, a little bit like the Dalai Lama, where he goes, okay, I'm going to give you two steps to enlightenment. And he says, the first one is, I want you to relax. I want you to relax like you've just run a marathon and you can now stop, or you've climbed a mountain and you've finally achieved it and you can now stop. And so that's step one. And then he giggles and he says, and you want to know what step two is? He goes, there is no step two, there's only step one. There is only relaxing some more. and we, that's what it's like. We're so, as you say, programmed to effort, you know? And we have so many, we talk about work ethic with such pride, and we talk about never giving up and, you know, do your best, and that programming is so omnipresent. It's so hard to imagine getting past it. You know, I get moments of it. I get moments of it in my meditation. That's why I do my meditation. It really is deep.
The listeners of this podcast can do a experiment just now. It's like if you try to understand what we are talking about, that's that inherent effort nature. Like you're trying to understand what they're talking about. You're comparing with all these models, the past data. And then there is this other side of you that just can relax and just absorb. And that's a different kind of listening. You're not actively listening, but you just let go of that part, that trying part. and just experience this podcast. And if you happen to understand the concept we are talking about, then that's fine, it's great. But it doesn't have to be the main priority. You could turn into that deeper version of yourself. What do you think of that, Carrie?
Oh, I love that. We started talking briefly before the show about I'm someone who just really I'm very auditory. I really like listening. Like, it's actually a very easy way for me to connect with silence is to hear noise. Whether it's someone talking, or we actually live under the flight path where we live, we're a little way out, so the airplanes aren't going sort of immediately above our head. They're quite a way up already. But it's funny, every time I feel that I hear a plane go by, it's like I imagine, or I sense, or I feel the sound, the particles of sound, the atoms that are vibrating, that are creating the sound, that are all around me. I'm inside this space. It's like the atoms are going through me. There's no separation between my skin and the and outside of the skin. You know, there's no, it's just, it's all atoms, and it's like I'm feeling or listening to that noise, to that sound, and feeling those particles inside my body, going through my body, rattling around and vibrating in my body. And it helps me then access, once the sound has passed, the silence that's left behind, that was always there before the noise entered. And I find the same thing when I'm listening to podcasts sometimes, or when I'm listening to a spiritual teacher or a meditation. It's just let the sound just happen. It's just, you know, it's just vibration. And it's almost like the looser. I've got this lovely yoga teacher. Many people know her. Her name is Adrienne, and she does a lot of free YouTube videos. And when you drop down and sort of bend over and sort of touching the ground, or touching your toes, or whatever it might be, she says, soften and fold. And I always think of that as, you know, that soften, that idea of soften, sort of separating out the atoms. So tense, you know, when your muscles get all tensed up. And that idea of soften, relax, release, open, like, again, that unknotting, the cloisters of atoms also tight and tightly wound up. So soften. And then I think of fold, like, you know, in poker, you fold your hand, you surrender, you let go, you give in, you let the just for a while. It's like we're such problem-solving machines. And one of, it must have been a question I heard maybe by a teacher one day, but what if there was no problem to solve for 10 minutes, for 20 minutes, for half an hour, whatever? What if for just these 10 minutes, there was no problem to solve, there was nothing to fix, there's nothing to do, there's nothing I have to mentally sort out or physically do? Just what if I could just mentally open, soften, fold at my heart level, open, soften, and then surrender at that heart level and at the gut level. Really kind of, you know, I don't know whether it's just me as a woman, always sucking my gut in, as we women often do, and to just really soften my belly and feel the energy around my belly. That's a, you know, that whole kind of, whoa, what is it to just physically and mentally, like, just let my brain almost like just a handkerchief that just sort of that was a stiff handkerchief or something, but it's allowed to just flop and soften and relax. You know, that's that, and to be in that space as I'm listening to people, as I'm listening to a podcast, as I'm driving, and I'm letting the world go past me, and I'm the still point, and the scenery is just moving around me, and I'm just in this deeply relaxed, open, surrendered space, just a passenger in my body, you know, are all places. They're all spaces that I love to access. And I think you're right. There's something really comfortable and easy about listening from that space. That's a beautiful idea. I love that you said that.
Yeah, and I think that in the coming months, coming years, it's more and more people will realize that they don't have to leave that state. And if we can just stay there, that's it. We can start with 10 minutes and then we try it longer and longer time, and then we don't have to leave it. Like, it's no reason to leave it. The only
No.
reason we leave it's just the fears that we haven't let go of, because everything will be provided for us, but that the fear is telling us it's that we need to do things, but that will just drop off more and more for more and more people in the coming months.
It's hard to imagine that meme, as it were, that idea, accepting that. I think we have to see a lot of examples of it before we start believing it. I think there would need to be, we would just need to see a lot of people doing that. And they are, it's happening. It is absolutely happening. I hear and see those testimonials through the stuff that I see and watch. I watch and listen to, I should say. But boy, it feels like it might be the last idea standing of the old regime. It's hard to imagine people letting go of that need to push and shove and do, you know. It's funny, I can access that space fairly easily. When I'm meditating, when I'm sitting and my eyes are closed, I can do it to some pretty reasonable degree if my eyes are open and I'm not doing something or absorbed in some work. But the moment, I was going to say the moment I'm speaking to someone, that's not true. I can stay in that space to some degree whilst I'm talking with people. But if I'm doing written work, computer work, as a training, when I'm training, I can be in that space to some pretty reasonable degree. When I'm working with people, when I'm in my business. But once, if there's something about computers or reading, when I'm reading or watching, once my eyes are busy, and brain as part of that, I'm trying to absorb or comprehend something. That's when I really lose the space for me. That feels much harder to maintain it there.
I get the sense that it's the intention behind the activity that sort of creates the, so because you're already in an action. So if you're in an action that is based in fear, then it's very hard to, because you are actually acting out fear. So
Right.
if it's a certain thing that we're doing and we're doing that thing because of fear, then we can't be in flow because we're already cut off the connection already at the decision point. So when we stop doing that, we say, ah, oh, we're doing that because of fear. Ah, oh, that's just an illusion. Oh, we stop doing that. So then we will not be engaged in that activity anymore. So, and we keep doing that more and more. And then we just do things that we love to do. And then when we just do things that we love to do, we are always in the flow. So if we find ourselves not in flow, then we can ask ourselves, why am I even doing this in the first place?
Ain't that the truth? And there's only love or fear at the end of the day. There's only love or fear. They are the only two driving motives for anything. People think of it as pleasure and pain, but it's really love and fear. And that's it. They're our two core motivators at that very human ego level. And it's really getting off that, getting off that, that scale altogether, that spectrum, and
Yeah,
there's a
that
whole.
spectrum is just pulling us into even more fear. Because action, that we send out that signal. So we send out the fear signal, which will then attract that vibration more into our lives. So the sooner we can stop doing things out of fear, the easier life will flow for us.
And I know that to be true from all the people that I've seen do that.
It's easier said
And
than
because
done.
it was my experience during lockdowns, oh God, the resistance, I can feel the resistance come up.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I don't know if this has been so much a podcast interview as a coaching session, Sama.
In any case, it was fun. I enjoyed it. It was really nice to get to know you and
It's
maybe we
been
should.
glorious. I've loved this. I absolutely love it. Thank you so much for inviting me on. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. And I will most definitely be coming along to some of your group meditations. So thank you, Sama.
Cool. Yes. Let's walk in abundance and see what the future unfolds to us.